clear skies over the Twin Cities now. North winds at 15 miles per hour. Temperature 70 Fahrenheit. That's 21 on the Celsius scale and going down fast. In the news tonight, Minneapolis police say they're looking for a woman who robbed the Bank of Minneapolis and Trust Company late this afternoon. Police say the woman gave a teller a note demanding money. The teller activated an alarm, but the woman fled on foot before a police office in front of the building could respond. Police say the suspect may be the same one who robbed another city bank last week and escaped with about $600. Meanwhile, Home Federal Savings and Loan Association in St. Louis Park was robbed of an undetermined amount of cash this afternoon. St. Louis Park police say two masked gunmen, one armed with a sawed-off shotgun, the other with a handgun, demanded money from a teller, then fled on foot. So far, there are no suspects and no leads. Negotiators aren't expected to get much rest between now and midnight Thursday as they continue to bargain in their attempts to avert a strike for 500,000 U.S. Postal Service workers. News Radio asked the president of the Postal Workers Union Local, Bud Holt, if they're concerned with the threat by Postmaster General that workers who strike could be fired.
They give us the same warning in 1970. It did not happen at that time because in 1970 and that when this wildcat strikes were called, the job actions were called and that the various people and that went out and they... And there was an amnesty settlement net with the unions through USPSA at that time.
Holt says that one of the main stumbling blocks in the negotiations is job security. The Federal Aviation Administration says it's investigating reports of an air traffic controller's concern that two Northwest Airlines planes might have been heading toward a collision Sunday afternoon. However, Neil Callahan, public affairs officer for the FAA in the Midwest, says there's no evidence that a crash almost happened. The FAA investigation began Thursday morning after inquiries from several Minneapolis newspapers and broadcasters. Disaster centers in Minneapolis and St. Paul have been closed. Those centers, which were set up to channel federal aid to flood victims, were intended to handle a large number of relief requests. Since the frequency of requests has dropped, the centers have been deactivated, but federal officials say aid requests can still be made through state and federal agencies. A committee of the St. Paul City Council today recommended that the license of the Cosmopolitan Sona be revoked because of several incidents of prostitution or solicitation of prostitution that have occurred there. The owner, Helen Fisher, claimed she didn't know what was going on because she had sublet the sauna to another person. But the committee did not accept that excuse, as Council President Dave Hoza explains.
However, the license committee felt that an owner has an obligation to know what takes place in the establishment and that ignorance was no defense and consequently moved to revoke the license.
Hoza says that the committee has done the same thing for several other saunas in the past few years, and three other saunas are slated for review in the next month or so. That council will vote whether to revoke the license next Tuesday. Gordon K. Yates, a convicted murderer paroled last year in California, will appear in court in Minneapolis tomorrow at a hearing into assault and robbery charges brought against him in connection with an incident in Minneapolis in 1971. Attorney Ellis Alcon and his wife Nancy, a Hennepin County commissioner, will testify against Yates, who was extradited to Minnesota to stand trial for the May 1971 assault and robbery of the Alcons at their South Minneapolis home. A tornado touched down near Wells this afternoon. No injuries reported. The tornado struck the farm of Donald Swenson about 3.5 miles east of Wells. A small barn was destroyed and other damaged livestock were trapped inside the second barn, but it's not known if any of those animals were hurt. Business and environmental leaders meet Thursday to discuss new federal environmental laws. News Radio's Catherine Reynolds has details.
The new federal environmental laws will be the subject of discussion Thursday. Dr. J. William Hahn, Vice President of General Mills, will be discussing the effect of new laws on the environment and the options business and environmentalists have to produce a quality environment. Dr. Hahn will speak to members and the board of directors of the Environmental Balance Association. State legislators and environmental agency officials will also attend. Toxic substances and hazardous waste will also be discussed, as will the potential of new laws for changing current lifestyles. For WWTC News Radio, this is Catherine Reynolds.
Robert Short's campaign manager says that Rod Carew has changed his mind about endorsing Short for the U.S. Senate. Fred Gates said at a news conference scheduled for today that the conference was canceled at the last minute after Carew's attorney recommended that Carew not make a public endorsement. Gates says Carew and Minnesota Vikings linebacker Wally Hilgenberg were to announce the formation of an Athletes for Short committee. Hilgenberg showed up, but the conference was canceled. Gates says it will be rescheduled, but no date has been set. Former State Senator George Konzemius has filed a defamation lawsuit for $200,000 against KSTP Television and anchorman Ron Majors. That suit charges Majors with implying during a TV newscast 2 years ago that Konzemius set fire to a grain elevator he partly owned in Faribault. The station allegedly billed the story as an exclusive item, disclosing never-before-heard information, but Kanzemia says the information was false and has hurt his business and his reputation. Dave Hellerman, WWTC News Radio.
Tell you, I mean, just gently suggesting it. I mean, wouldn't some good morgue kebab taste good just about this time of the evening? You know, something from Abdul Qayyum's Caravan Sarai. And maybe tonight's one of those rare nights where I'll sit here and probably not do a commercial for Abdul's place because we've got it here in the studio and no sense settling for second best and we've got the real thing. We're talking about restaurants tonight. And those of you who are listening and are calling, our lines are full, people are hungry, and the questions continue. Let's do that. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
You know, I heard that check before, and, you know, I'd just like to say that I think we have some of the best eating places around anywhere, and I think it's about time we hear some of the opinions from the three men there about what they think our dining facilities are like.
Well, they're obviously not going to say that the Minneapolis Twins of St. Paul area is second or third rate, but what's your favorite?
Chi-Chi's.
Where?
Chi-Chi's.
Chi-Chi's.
494 in Nicollet, I believe.
What is Chi-Chi's like?
It's a Mexican restaurant, and it is delicious.
Let's talk about Mexican restaurants. We can do that, can't we? None of you gentlemen here, as far as I know, operate a Mexican restaurant. How many of them are there around, Chum?
I would say there's quite a few of them right now. In fact, I think in the marketplace, I think Mexican cuisine now takes up about 14% of the food market, believe it or not, which is a tremendous growth and all within the last 5 years. Very interesting.
By and large, by the way, and this lady can respond to that, by and large, is Mexican food generally a little less in price?
I think so, and it comes a lot faster, too.
Comes a lot faster than
yeah.
two. All right, thank you very, very much. I do appreciate that. Moving down to line five, let's take that call next. Hello.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I'd like to comment about a kind of a disturbing trend I see within the restaurant business. I see more and more what I call glorified fast food operations within the food business. I would call maybe quasi-formal.
Quasi-formal.
Yes, they usually go by names, two names like steak and this or beef or this, and they're owned by large food corporations for the most part. And I find that the service usually is you're waited on by people are like robots. What was the best way
that,
to put
that
it?
That was last night's program. It was all about robots.
Right. I caught a few minutes of that.
I hope that you enjoyed it.
Oh, very much so. But getting back to restaurants, the waitresses and waitresses are kids that don't know their ear from their elbow. They come on like robots. The food, one steak tastes like the other. It's a glorified McDonald's, from my opinion. And I see this trend all over the country. They're all over, and they're all over here in town. And like I say, they're owned usually by the large food corporations. And
okay, now I'm not going to drop you here. You've covered a point that I think demands some. Maybe Abdul would like to gently respond to a bit of what you've said.
Sure.
Well, naturally, I don't want to criticize these large operations, but I go back to my first statement that the miracles of the free enterprise capitalistic system is that it's the public, it's the customer that can keep a business in operation, or it's the customer that can really send the business right down to his grave.
Mm-hmm.
And my sincere feeling is I'm not for the fast food operations myself, but nevertheless, they do exist, and they are getting bigger and bigger. People that they come to places like the Caravanserai or Norseman family operations,
mm-hmm.
and perhaps we don't want to make a chain, and that is the purpose, and that is, you just hit it right on the head, is because we cannot perform. If we have to do a good job and give you the service and the quality, we cannot do it on a mass production basis, because any time that you go on a mass production basis, you have to lose something. And so my suggestion is that don't patronize these places, and if everybody does the same thing, I'm sure that they are going to, you know where they're going to end up. Either they're going to improve or they're going to be out of the business.
Sure.
Well, I think probably the thing that you're getting to is a factor that we've had to redefine service. If you want to go out for a dining adventure with some friends and have a great evening, then you want to go to a full table service restaurant in which you are going to take some time and you are just plain going to enjoy yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But what you got to recognize about fast food is that they redefine the word service to mean quick service for the people that want to come in and get out in a big hurry.
But I think you misunderstood. I'm not putting down McDonald's, Burger King, those type of places. But I'm talking about places that are supposed to be, not quite as formal as the top places in town, but a formal dining experience, drinks, prime rib or what have you. You drop maybe, for a couple with drinks, you'd probably drop $30-$40. Just as easy as you would drop it at Charlie's, Murray's, or what have you.
Barney, do you want to respond to that?
I think I'd like to cover one point with this young gentleman in that respect. Mr. Board touched on earlier in the program the numbers of dollars and the percentage of the food budget dollar that is being spent out.
But it's growing phenomenally.
That's correct. And the only way that anyone can keep up with that, I personally could not go out and start three or four restaurant operations at the present time because I don't know where I would get the capital, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
One of the places that I think you're talking about, the steak and what have you,
yeah,
it's phenomenal, the cost of the building and the equipment, and the average person that would like to go into private enterprise just cannot do it, and this is one of the reasons that the major corporations, and incidentally, if you read the report from Green Giant, one of their major sources of profit is from their restaurant operations.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And just as Mr. Abdul said, if you don't care for that type of service, then there's only one thing to do. You don't go to them.
The epitome of poor service I got at one of these places the other night, if I may explain. I sat down with several friends, and we were going to have some drinks and a little something to eat. And a waiter came up, and if you've gone to these places, you know what the waiters look like. They're about 20, 22 years old. They've never been waiters or waitresses before in their lives. They're all wearing these cute little uniforms. And he rattled off, he couldn't even say good evening without it sounding like it came out of the company corporation manual. And
how would that good evening sound coming out of the how would the good evening sound coming out of the company corporation manual?
Well, let me see if I can
like a robot.
Oh yeah. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Let's see. Good evening. How are you? Our special this evening is blah 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 blah. Thank you.
You see now if I may be permitted to put in a stark, almost naked contrast to that.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to go over to a certain restaurant in St. Paul, it would be, good evening, welcome to Caravan Sarai, I'm Abdul Qayyum.
Sure.
Would you like to sit yourself on the low table, you know, the low cushions? Please don't push on the table when you get up or you'll have rice.
Sure, well, that's half the fun. Sure.
I mean, that's really hospitality, and they mean it.
You got it.
That's it.
You got it. So they won't be seeing any of my business. And I think anybody that enjoys a good meal and good service would probably be staying away from those places. But I can see a growing number of Americans don't really care. They're used to that kind of service.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Let me interrupt here a little bit. Mm-hmm. Understand that many of the people that you first meet in the restaurant industry are on their first experience mm-hmm. of work. You know, you don't have chores anymore. You have many, many people. In fact, our particular industry, the restaurant industry, right now leads the nation as an individual industry in number of employees and gives more people their first opportunity for work and their exposure to the general public. So a lot of people still have to learn. So really, don't really knock that kind of place. Maybe you're looking at some young people who are experiencing the first thing that they've ever experienced in the work world.
I'm a young person myself. I haven't even reached the age of 25 yet. But I do enjoy going out to a nice restaurant. I don't think I really My money spends just as good at that place as it would at a finer restaurant, which costs basically the same. And I don't think I have to be really...
Okay, my friend.
All right. Good evening.
But are you still there?
I get the message, yes.
I was going to say something. I was going to say that but because you're one of the better calls tonight, we'd give you the first prize, which is maybe two hamburgers from, the golden something or other.
Yeah, sure.
Or second prize, well, never mind.
Uh-oh.
Thanks for calling. Bye-bye. Let's take this call next, I do believe, right after this.
I'm John Euland of Rosedale Leasing. Summer in a new car go together. I have all sorts of new cars, trucks, and recreational vehicles. Whatever you want this summer, I've got at Rosedale Leasing. Leasing means you don't have to come up with that down payment or trade-in. Leasing means you can turn over a new car every 1, 2, or 3 years at a profit. Leasing means you can have a new car this summer and come out ahead. Even your insurance payments can be less. At Rosedale Leasing, I can give you almost any make, any model, including the Japanese economy compacts. I'll show you how you can enjoy top transportation for so much less than the total cost of owning a new car. The answer is Rosedale Leasing. With 25 years of leasing experience, we will not be undersold. Call me tomorrow, John Euland, 636-0349. That number again is 636-0349.
Back in the 1950s, salesman Fred Morrison watched a group of students sailing pie pans through the air. He thought this could be a national pastime, coining the name Frisbee. He patented the Frisbee flying disc and sold them as discs that flew on invisible wire. He later sold that invention to a leading toy manufacturer. Today, of course, Frisbee is a very successful product as well as a national pastime. Many individuals like you have good ideas. Discuss your ideas with us and let us help you try to market them. We're Invention Marketing Incorporated, a national company providing marketing services to individuals. Call IMI anytime, day or night. Our number is 338-7872. Again, that's 338-7872. Call for a free brochure from Invention Marketing Incorporated. We're in the phone book at 338-7872, Invention Marketing Incorporated, downtown Minneapolis.
Thank you much. Getting back to the restaurant trade, and our line's absolutely full, and our gentlemen are going to stay with us and talk about the restaurant business, I suppose, up until 1 o'clock in the morning, if they so desire, and that's just fine with me. Question is, what sort of profit do you make in the restaurant business? I was making a joke several hours earlier and said something, well, it's not too bad a business. The hours are easy, and you must make at least around 30 to 35% profit.
Well, let me quote a couple of things,
and then I'll
let the guy that knows give you the solid answer on it. But I remember a survey that was done among university students, and they said, they asked the students, how much profit do you think a business makes? The lowest that they said was 45%. And the next question they asked, what do you think would be a reasonable profit for a businessman to make? And at that point, they said 25%. Now, I'd like to ask Barney, really, what really is the facts on something of that nature?
Well, this is a moot point, too, because I don't know if they're talking about gross profit, net profit, or profit after taxes, or what have you. But, basically, if you have all read or looked at corporate reports, you will find that the majority of the major corporations in the United States, if they can average a 4% net profit after taxes, they're very, very happy. And that is just the situation that we're in at the present time. If we can match their 4%, then we're not in too bad a shape. But it's
4%.
Tougher and tougher every day with prices and inflation as it is.
I'll tell you, an awful lot of them would like to be able to make 25%, but it's not there.
Wouldn't you like to...
I would love to. You know, one of the things about the restaurant operation that I may bring, you go to the grocery store this past summer, here just about a couple of months ago, never in the history of the United States a case of lettuce went up to $25 a case, meaning for 24 pieces of lettuce. Now, the grocery store immediately increases their prices, but I am not aware of five restaurants being at the liberty that immediately changed their $5.95 to $7.95. I'm talking about their dinners. So the restaurant business has to stick basically to their prices, because changing a menu by itself, at least in our restaurant, it's going to cost me $500 to change my menu.
The printing and expenses.
The printing expenses.
Sure.
So I'm not going to change that because the prices are so unstable. We can talk about, you know, prices of meat, from hamburger to steaks, lamb. I even don't want to talk about lamb. Last night or the night before last, I was in a restaurant, $14.50 for lamb chops. My sister is visiting with me from Switzerland, and we are very fond of lamb. And the gentleman, the waiter, told me, he says, well, even at $14.50, we cannot serve it because we will be losing money. And so there you have it. It's very difficult. It is very difficult. With the inflation, with the changing prices from day to day, the restaurateur gets trapped between the public and the cost of the groceries.
All right, Abdul Qayyum of Caravanserai, just heard. Let's move ahead. Our lines are full. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, sir. You're on the air.
Bob?
Yes.
Your guest there, is that one of your, both of your clients there?
Abdul Qayyum, the fellow just heard, one of our sponsors, yes.
Yeah, tell him you are the greatest asset to his business as anybody I've ever known. All you need is just you and a couple of waiters out there, and he have business well.
Well, thank you for that, and I happen to agree with you, and this is what makes the capitalistic system.
That's for sure.
And I have to live up to whatever he says. Yeah, remember that.
I don't know how you can really live up to it.
Oh, definitely. Otherwise, I don't think you're going to take anything for granted when you're in business, in any business.
But the way he talks about it, he's almost got me eating the concrete.
He is very sincere about what he says.
That's for sure. But I wanted to respond to one of the guests that called in a while ago about what bad restaurants they have. And he also named one that I work at. And talking about
WWTC Talk Line with Bob Allard. Call 333-2363.
Have good food out there. And also he made a reference about whatever place it is out there. I know they have pretty good food out there.
Now, the place that you're working for, how's the food of that restaurant? It's rather good, I understand.
It's very good. You know, I took a survey myself out in the parking lot, you know.
Out in the parking lot? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I take care of the parking lot on Saturdays and Mondays. And, you know, and I check people coming out, and I greet them, you know, and open the door for them and park the car.
Now, may I ask a question? Isn't Jack's now in its third generation of the restaurant business?
I'm pretty sure, yes, he is. Yes, he has. He has three of them. He has one in St. Paul and one on University and one in the Golden Valley.
No, but I mean, isn't that the third generation that is now in the business?
Yes. Yes, that's the third generation. And they have very good food. And everybody that come out there, I talk to, I ask them, how do you enjoy your dinner? And they says, oh, it was wonderful. The only thing they hate, they say, is just too much of it.
I was wondering when somebody would make that comment. The servings are a little bit large. Would you gentlemen like to respond to that? That comes up every once in a while when we talk about food. Why do they serve such large portions in restaurants?
Well, if you were to determine the amount of food that would satisfy everyone, it's quite difficult. Your major steakhouses now have gone to a queen size cut and a king size cut and what have you, in order to overcome that. And in a lot of cases where the major steakhouses or major supper clubs, major dining, evening dining, now have gone the salad bar route. And this too has added to too much food.
Mm-hmm.
But there again, it is what the public demands. I would rather have a person leave my place full than say, gee, aren't they skimpy on their servings.
That's right.
My response would be that, first of all, I appreciated the comments of this gentleman. I have eaten at Jack's, and I have enjoyed their dinners. In our particular restaurant, in our operation, our system is that we have our dinners, and then we have dinners that includes an appetizer, and then we have dinners that it's complete, from appetizers to all the way to the desserts. So that will actually define the size of the dinner that one individual might like to have.
Mm-hmm.
We have simplified, actually, our menu, And if an individual doesn't want to have the appetizer and the dessert and et cetera, et cetera, he can have a smaller meal.
Mm-hmm.
And those who like to indulge and they are really hungry and they don't go out as often, so we provide a complete comprehensive meal mm-hmm. for them. And everything is pretty much defined and explained.
Uh-huh. Okay, so
plus the customers also like doggy bags, believe it
that's
or not.
True.
And
yeah,
they
that's
like
true.
To take okay. some of that food
yeah,
home.
That's true.
And that makes a big difference,
good,
too.
Good question to you, sir, on the line. You're out there in the lot where you can view just about everything.
Yeah,
a lot of the customers coming out of Jack's carrying their doggy bags.
Oh,
prize.
All the time. Some of them forget the doggy bag, and I run in and get it for them, you know.
<That's>
one lady came out, and she says, well, I said this is the doggy bag. This will be my lunch tomorrow. And they enjoy it very much.
All right, sir. And good luck to you, and good night. And I certainly enjoyed that call.
Yeah, and you do have a man that is really can sell.
Well, I'll tell you what, my friend. Certainly one of the great calls tonight. Abdul, when this gentleman comes over and says, you know, Bob Allard sent me, you treat him right, okay?
Yeah. That is my promise, and I invite him personally one evening. When I'm there, I host on Friday and Saturday evenings.
Friday and Saturday.
That's pretty much by reservation. I like to invite him as a guest.
Do you have a wife?
Yeah, Joe, yes.
All right.
I invite you, and you treat your wife.
Okay.
All right.
Where is this?
Any Friday or Saturday night by reservation, and when you come there, make sure you announce of our conversation.
Okay. I'll do that.
I look forward.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Here's a question which I suppose gets asked or at least wondered about every once in a while by people not in the restaurant business, and it goes along with the large portions, and sometimes it sort of saddens you to see those plates being taken back to wherever, pretty well loaded. What sort of state laws, regulations govern what is salvageable and what is not, or is none of it salvageable? It all gets
none of it salvageable.
Is that by law?
That's right.
Even such things as pats of butter?
Nope, that's all.
You can't use it again.
Anytime it's been exposed, as supposedly you get rid of it.
You say supposedly, but it's a pretty firm restaurant
it's a
rule.
It's a firm law that everything that has been out on the table is to be disposed of.
What
reused.
I say, what generally...
Bob, I'll give you another little situation. Every good restaurateur that I know of watches the garbage cans. Now, do you know why he watches the garbage cans? He watches the garbage cans to find out what the people are not eating. And boy, the moment he sees something overburdening, he's going to change his menu in a hurry. Because the main thing that you've got there is that he wants to satisfy the customers that are coming in there so that he keeps coming back. And so consequently, there isn't a good restaurateur I know of that doesn't watch that garbage can consistently. And they'll do that 10 times a night because they want to know what the customer is eating, what he is not eating.
Mm-hmm.
And if the garbage cans are getting empty, he knows doggone good and well the people are getting there. Their fair share of what they
Shumbor just heard, and we've got an eating bunch of people out there. Those lines stayed jammed. We're making them hungry. Our guests are going to stay here. We'll be back following the news coming up next from NBC. This is fun as we are talking about my favorite subjects, food, 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 next to the weather, I suppose, and maybe a few other things. Let's see, 68 degrees, wind from the north, 16 miles per hour, sky is delightfully clear in the Twin Cities, and there's a full moon out there. Maybe that's what's making the difference. Mostly clear skies tonight. This is WWTC, Minneapolis and St. Paul. 12 midnight, news next, NBC.
NBC Radio News, I'm Don Alexander. Dr. Peter Bourne, the president's chief drug abuse advisor, has taken an indefinite leave after admitting he wrote a drug prescription to a fictitious person. The arrangement, he says, was used to spare embarrassment for a member of his staff, the real recipient of the controlled substance Quaalude. NBC White House correspondent Bill Lynch has more.
After deciding to take a leave of absence until the Quaalude charges are resolved, Dr. Bourne revealed that he had written 9 other prescriptions for members of the White House staff. According to Press Secretary Jody Powell, Bourne said that about half of those were for drugs which, like Quaalude, are controlled substances. None of the other prescriptions, said Powell, were for Quaalude, and none were written with pseudonyms. President Carter's chief aide, Hamilton Jordan, volunteered that he had gotten two of the prescriptions, one for diet pills, which are on the controlled substances list, the other for an antibiotic. Bill Lynch, NBC News, The White House.
More news in a moment.